Hello and welcome to episode 103 of the Good, Good Golf Podcast. Rod Murray captaining the ship as we sail today into the murky and controversial waters of golf course rankings. We all love a list. Newspapers and magazines have been cashing in on that forever. However, that doesn't mean lists are without value. And when it comes to ranking courses, the discussions that they promote, sometimes heated, it must be said, is, as Alistair McKenzie pointed out, all to the good of the game. It's been a little over a month since Golf Australia Magazine's biennial Top 100 Courses list was released, and today we're going to be putting the editor of that erstwhile publication under the microscope, Brendan James, along in just a moment, to talk golf course rankings. Just in case anybody isn't aware, this podcast, both of its co-hosts, have affiliations with Golf Australia Magazine, and we make no secret of that fact. Speaking of co-hosts, let me bring in Path Connoisseur, Golf Australia Top 100 panellist, and since last month, golf film critic, Adrian Logue. How do you find the time to fit in a day job?
Oh, I'm very busy, right, as you know.
as we just discussed.
I'm extremely
Twitter
busy.
Twitter feed tells us how busy you are.
But I hardly tweet at all. You're always on me about that. But yeah, I'm very inactive on
welcome.
It's quality over quantity. That's not for me.
Let's just not, shall we? Enough about you. Our guest today, as I mentioned, is Golf Australia. Oh, hang on. I'll come back to you.
Okay,
I haven't forgotten you.
Okay.
Our guest today, as I mentioned, is Golf Australia magazine editor Brendan James, a colleague and good friend of mine since we were both teenagers and captain of the Golf Australia ship since Beach. Since when have you been editor? Been a long time.
Oh, I've been editor for a while, but I've been mag for 26 years.
27, 95.
Started the morning of Greg Norman's meltdown at the Masters.
It took you to 2013 to get someone across the line.
Yeah, I thought I was jinx. I thought I was the thorn in Australian golf side.
That is a hell of a start to a career. Looking forward to chatting to you in just a moment, because before we come to the top 100, Logue, you've got something you want to talk about.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a miserable couple of weeks we're in the midst of here in Sydney, right? It's like got some sort of rain apocalypse occurring.
Oh, fires. Floods, pestilence and disease, and war.
That's right.
We're there.
Do you know where it's not raining? And where they'd be playing golf right now?
Tell me.
Barmboogle Dunes.
Oh, nice.
Would you like to go to Barmboogle Dunes?
I'd love to go to Barmboogle Dunes.
Would you like to go down for like a night and play a couple of games there?
Depends who I'm with, but yeah, generally speaking.
What if you could go for three nights?
Come on. Is there a set of steak knives at the end of this? What are you playing? You've got something
you could go for three nights, play two games at Barmboogle Dunes,
yeah.
A game at Lost Farm, and Boogle Run.
Oh, nice.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
I would like that.
What
if it was in good company?
What if?
You are terrible at that.
Would he have to give a leg or an arm?
Two three-course dinners thrown in there as well.
When's the event and how much is it and what's it about? Because I really like the sound of this, actually.
All you would need to do, Rod, is to get yourself to Launceston. Airport transfers be taken care of from Launceston to Barmboogle Dunes, all of that. What would you expect to pay for that?
Oh, come on. I would pay whatever I've got in the bank for that. I don't know. How much?
What if I said, Rod, it was $1,300?
I'd say, you're joking. That's pretty good.
That is extremely
good. When is it?
Value.
What is it? Forget about the money. I like the idea of this.
On top of that, what if all of those, you can have all of that, but with a group where you've got the whole of the Dunes Resort basically.
We've turned into the golf shopping channel. Yes.
That'd be fantastic, wouldn't it?
It would be outstanding.
Between the 5th and the 8th of May, you can do that. Just go to thegolfersalliance.com. We'll put
a link in the show notes, wouldn't it?
You can sign up. This is the first we're advertising of it. So if you're getting quick, listening.
Who's we and what is it?
The we is myself and Mike Siggreaves, who's a good friend of the show. And owner of the Golf Travel Agency, who's really the one doing all of the work behind all of this.
Surprise, surprise. He's doing all the work behind the scenes, yeah.
We're all going to – that's how we're getting such great rates. Mike does this for a living.
Why are you doing it?
We're forming this group called the Golfers Alliance, and the idea is that it's a community of golfers who are passionate about golf and golf course architecture – and other things as well, like agronomy and inclusion, public golf, independent golf media, environmental.
Sounds like a bunch of middle-aged white blokes.
Well, inclusion is one of the things that
which is kind of what I'm getting.
Important to us there. So if you're a listener, and a lot of our listeners are middle-aged white blokes, and this may well fill up with middle-aged white blokes, but if there are people out there who aren't middle-aged white blokes, let it be known that we're going to run an inclusive event and we want to make you most welcome.
I mean, apart from just welcoming people to come along and share the joy of golf, what does that mean, running an inclusive event, do you reckon?
I don't know. I'm going to learn a bit about that on the way.
You know what middle-aged white blokes want.
That, a lot of this is us learning how to run an inclusive event, because so much of this sort of golf stuff is like these – they're set up as boys' weekends.
You've only got to go on YouTube to see that, don't you?
Exactly. So we're trying to learn how to make something like this more inclusive, and people who have an interest in some of these things like in, you know, public golf and independent golf media, environmental issues, agronomy, sustainability, you don't have to be – you know, in fact, the audience that's probably least interested in that is middle-aged white men. So that's we want to get, you know, a lot of people along and make them feel welcome and enjoy some great golf at a World Top 100 venue.
A bit like work conferences is the way I see this sort of thing. A bit like you go to the, you know, not that I've ever been to one, but you could imagine you go to those conference events that go for 2 or 3 days for an industry, and there's lots of people get up and give talks and whatnot. That's not where the good stuff happens. The good stuff happens in the hallways and around the meals where people just talk to each other. I reckon the same's true of these golf trips. There'll be lots of fun on the golf course, but sitting around and talking to other golfers afterwards about the courses and about all the issues that you've just talked about with like-minded people, that's what'll be the best thing about this trip.
Like-minded people and a diversity of people.
A diversity of like-minded. Well, you've got the Venn diagram, haven't you?
That's right.
And the overlap is this huge chunk in the middle, which
there's
is gone.
There's an enormous overlap amongst golfers. And
Republicans play golf.
We're all pretty much like just like little variations around the edges of the Venn diagram. We're also going to have some significant industry guests come along. We'll announce who some of those will be in the coming weeks. There's not a lot of time to book. 5th to the 8th of May, so that's not far away. But it is a fantastic time to play Barnboogle Dunes.
Anyone who's concerned about the season, the time, just ask Mike Clayton when is the best time to go to Barnboogle Dunes. And I've done it myself around May, and then again in September. It is fantastic.
All right.
Cool in the mornings, cool in the evenings, fantastic. You're playing in jumpers off by the second or third hole. It's just beautiful weather.
The fescue's sort of like starting to brown off a little bit. It's like it really is a great time of year.
And will you be recording an episode of the podcast down there? So you either work for the week. Can I have a week off? May 5 to 8?
I'm still going to make you come.
I wish I could, but I literally can't. Unfortunately, I've got commitments here that I won't be able to get out. But I do urge anybody who's got an interest in golf, get along. I think that'll be a terrific one. I'm actually disappointed that I can't come. I think it would be fantastic. Best of luck to you.
It's going
to
be a lot of fun.
Invoices in the mail for that advertorial there. Enough of all that. I hope that goes well. We'll mention it again between now and each week, but remind people. But look in the show notes. You'll find the things. Beach.
Yes.
You've been very quiet over there, which is nice. Very kind of you.
I didn't want to step on Adrian's toes.
Sounds all right, doesn't it? The sort of thing that you and I used to do.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah. Let me start by quoting yourself back at you. This is from your intro to the Top 100 story.
Mm-hmm.
The exercise of ranking golf courses is not an exact science, but based on the various points of our criteria, I think our judging panel has contributed to a list that won't let you down if you let it guide you to layouts where you'll have the most fun. That's a little bit long, that sentence, but it does make sense. I like what's in there. Each judge has their own ideas of what makes a good golf course. It's a subjective exercise, so the end result will always raise some debate. Therefore, you won't find the word definitive used here, as that would be arrogant nonsense. What you will find is a thorough and transparent ranking of the best courses to be found throughout Australia. Now, the key word there in all that is me is debate. Is this a cynical exercise just to sell magazines, this top 100 list that you release every 2 years?
I wouldn't say it's a cynical exercise, but it does sell magazines. It also, I mean, there's two sides to every ranking. There's the commercial side of it, mm-hmm. which every golf publication is recognised over the journey now that it's something worth doing and investing the time and money in to do. And then there's the other side of it where you have golf courses now, and we've seen with the evolution of our own top 100, that it inspires clubs to aspire to be in the top 100, and they go out and invest lots of money in improving their golf courses to be part of that top 100 so that they actually attract members, paying guests, and have a better golf course. We only talking before we came on air that, you know, to get into the top 100 in 2022 is infinitely more harder, or a lot harder, than it was in, say, 1990. Apart from the fact that there's a lot more golf courses, the standard has gone through the roof.
Rising tides lift all boats. Pick apart some of that commercial because, of course, as readers, Logue, and as a panelist, we just think about the golf. Golf is a business, isn't it? So often, and those of us in the golf business, the business gets in the way of the golf. This, to me, is one of those great areas where the two sort of complement each other because BJ's right. The commercial imperative of being inside the top 100 drives improvement at the golf course level, doesn't it?
It certainly does. I enjoy the absurdity of putting a number against a course. I think that definitiveness of that is unavoidable.
89.
it's unavoidable in the list, but I think the subtlety is sort of lost on the consumer at that point. Like nobody's reading your disclaimer at the front.
No, but my reference to definitive is more a shot across the bow of some of our competitors who say this is the list.
The list, yeah.
This is the list. And make this claim of being definitive as the list. Well, there's no such thing.
It's as you say, it's a subjective exercise.
Obviously, and you've got 100 courses there. We've actually had ranking lists in the past where we've had 101 because there's been tie at the end because the when you start putting numbers against courses and then you get down to the end and you go, well, hang on, there's 0.01 of a point between these two courses. How can you really
What are you suggesting? Two bronze medals at the Olympics?
Makes a mockery of the whole thing, really.
That's right. It's happened.
Not when there's been 0.01 of a difference, I can tell you. I do take your broader point there. Now, what people do first when they get these lists, they go open up, they look at number 1 to 10. See that? Then they go to the other end of the list, interestingly, isn't it? That's what people look at, and that's where the two sort of areas of controversy are. Give us the top 10. I see you've got the list in front of you. Read out the top 10 for us, and we'll have a quick chat about those, perhaps.
Royal Melbourne Golf Club West, Kate Wickham Links, Barnboogle Dunes at 3, Barnboogle Lost Farm at 4, Kingston Heath at 5, Peninsula Kingswood Country Club North Course at 6, Royal Melbourne Golf Club East at 7, the National Golf Club's Gunnamatta Course at 8, New South Wales Golf Club comes back into the top 10 at number 9, and Victoria Golf Club at number 10.
Can't imagine there'd be too many arguments. People might argue about the order, perhaps, but it wouldn't be too many arguments about that, would you think?
The arguments come from people who think that the courses that fall just outside that top 10 should be in the top 10. So, interestingly, Royal Adelaide at 11 dropped out of the 10 from 2020 to number 11, and the Moonar course at the National. So, I've had letters from members at the National who say the Moonar course is far better than Gunnamatta. Why have you got Gunnamatta at number 8 and the National's Moonar course is number 12? Well, that's just where
they fell. Because to put people in the picture, how do you do these rankings? It's quite the mathematical algorithm, isn't it? So I'm glad I'm not the editor because I wouldn't be able to work it out.
Well, it kind of is mathematical in a sense.
Do you use a calculator when you're tallying these things up? Then there's and it's mathematical.
In fact, actually, what I do is I use Excel spreadsheet. That do it for me.
Don't you just add up the money that comes in a big paper bag, like this brown paper bag or
one
something?
One of the greatest myths out there.
There's a lot of maths in that.
You know what? Can you buy your way into the top 100? If you're a golf course out there and you want to be in the top 100, can you buy your way in?
No.
That's important, is it not?
One of the greatest myths is that if you advertise in Golf Australia magazine, you'll get a spot in the top 100. And the more you spend, the higher your ranking will be.
Now, how much did Royal Melbourne spend last year? It must have been a fortune.
Royal Melbourne have never spent a dollar. Nor have, Kate Wickham have, particularly in the years just after it opened. Barnboogle Dunes and Lost Farm, not a cent.
Greatest marketing strategy in the world, Barnboogle Dunes. Just have two great golf courses and let everyone talk about them.
Yeah. Imagine being able to go there for
Imagine being there for $1,300.
Yeah. So of the current top 10, only one course in that top 10 has ever spent an advertising dollar with this magazine. And then I look through the next 10 and there's only two courses. So the fact of the matter is that the process is pretty simple. It's a rolling 2-year period. Mm-hmm. Over that, the 2 years, our judges go out and look at golf courses. And over that period of time, we've got a core group that have been ranking courses with us for a number of years. And then we've got kind of like an extension group, which kind of rotates around. I kind of like to try and keep the list fresh with having new eyes look at golf courses. So every couple of years we'll rotate people in and out, or some people maybe take advantage of being a judge and do things they shouldn't do, so they get punted.
I was going to say,
they self-select themselves as being rotated out.
That's exactly.
Yeah, so there's been instances where that's occurred, unfortunately.
So just to make that clear, people have said, I'm a Golf Australia panelist, you should let me play this golf course for free so that I can judge it.
Some have even gone further than that and said, can you give me some accommodation? And by the way, my family's coming with me. And then I had a phone call from a particular general manager and said, oh, is this guy on your panel? Yeah.
And you said, not anymore.
And then he explained the situation and I said, can you just leave it with me? And I rang the guy and said, you're no longer on the panel. And then I rang the general manager back and said, you can cancel that accommodation booking. So that's why we've got a core group that they know the rules and they know how it all works. They've been doing it for a number of years and they're very, very good.
Their interest is purely golf. I know some of those people, and it is purely golf. They're not interested in anything else.
And then we've got the others that have got an interest in golf course architecture, but they might see things differently to our other guys. So they go out over a 2-year period and they look at as many golf courses as possible, which has been a little difficult in the last couple of years, but they've unbelievably been able to see, like, one guy actually throughout the entire pandemic toured around Australia in a camper van.
Wow.
Playing golf courses. And would cross borders when he was able to and then keep on going.
Why didn't I do that? That's a hell of a way to spend a pandemic.
Absolutely.
Great thinking.
And he was on our panel and he came up with some really interesting additions to a list. So then everyone submits their lists and then I go through them one by one and everything gets tallied up. And so, for example, you know, a course.
So you've got criteria, don't you? Is there a set of criteria that people need to rank courses on?
So we've kept it pretty simple and it's a working guideline rather than a criteria. So the working guideline is that when you look at a golf course, the primary focus is design. The secondary focus is conditioning. And then I implore on the judges to take into account, has there been any sort of, has it been drought? Has there been flood? When they've been there is to take that into account and imagine that, okay, it's not going to be like this all the time.
Carbrook's condition is probably not ideal just at the moment, is it, if you were to go and rank it today?
No. And this was particularly, I think, going back maybe 15 years or so, we're in the midst of a pretty long drought and a lot of courses were hurting. It didn't bode well for judges to go out there and go, oh, but Jesus, bloody dry.
We'll come back to that point, but there is an issue, isn't there? I mean, the general golf population of this, in the minds of far too many people, condition is more important than design.
That's right. And look, you know, if conditioning was the primary focus of your ranking, then the courses with the biggest budgets would ultimately come out on top.
Another list there for you, Beach. Best top 100 condition courses in Australia.
And clubhouses and things like that.
Lots of other things.
I get questions thrown at me all the time. It's like, you've never even been and like had a meal in our clubhouse. Like, how could you possibly rank it? And I was like, well, it's not about having a meal in your clubhouse. It's about the golf out on the golf course.
Yeah.
They have statements like that.
Although none of it's the chowder at Barmbugle Dunes, obviously, which I know you were about to mention because you could have that in May when you were down there. That's kind of important though, isn't it, BJ? Isn't part of golf, and these are the corners that we pick at in this discussion, is this notion of an overall experience. and clubhouses and meals and those things are a part of that. And in fact, let's be frank, part of the appeal of Barmbugle Dunes is that overall experience. You come off the course into the clubhouse, super the fireplace chatter. There. You have your meal. It's very laid back. It's nice. You've got different sorts of experiences at other places. It's all part of it, is it not?
Part of it, if it's the ranking is the top 100 golf experiences.
Nice. Very Clayton-esque, that answer, wasn't it?
We're actually ranking the top 100 golf courses.
So,
you said. You know, they might have the best seafood chowder in the land, but it doesn't get them over the line to be the number one golf course.
The Royal Melbourne Clubhouse, something happened tomorrow and it was closed, you could never go in there. It doesn't affect the ranking of the golf course.
No, not at all. In fact, I've played courses in Ireland where the golf course has blown me away and the clubhouse is nothing more than four walls and a bar.
And a roof, generally.
Oh, and
in Ireland, especially.
Yeah, and a roof. And it certainly hasn't affected my opinion of the golf course.
There's definitely courses on this list which I think deliver a fantastic member experience. Like they've got a fiercely loyal membership and they get delivered what they want.
What are you thinking of there? What courses would you point to when you say that?
Yeah, I'd say the Australian would probably be the quintessential example of that. Where it's a very enjoyable day to go there too. It's not necessarily a very pure golf experience. And I think the objections that people have put into their comments in the list, which is a real feature of the list.
We'll come to that in a moment.
Yeah. Speak to that. But at the same time, it doesn't take away from the experience of playing the Australian. It's a pretty fun day to be there. The whole end-to-end thing in the clubhouse and the locker room and, all of that stuff.
And it would probably rank in top 10 of golf experiences in the country.
Yeah, that's right. It's one of those ones that's extremely aspirational. Most club members in Sydney would aspire, the membership that they would aspire to get is the Australian.
And that part of the problem with ranking golf courses is not to be seduced by the experience and to be seduced by absolutely pristine conditioning.
It can be harder than it sounds, can't it?
Oh, absolutely.
It ranks and 36 it takes for reference in this list.
It's number 36. When it ranked number 40 in 2020, we got hammered for having it 40 as the 40th best golf course in the country. To be frank, it probably was a bit low, but I think it's not far off where it should be in the list, given that the some of the design and some of the things that they've done there over the years, and I'll point to Chip Bark in the rough, where it used to be just sandy wasteland.
Oh, I thought that bark was just like it came from the natural processes of millennia of weather events, just like.
But my understanding is that they're actually going to be moving away from that, so it wouldn't surprise me if that.
And the pine needles like fly in from like they get blown in on the natural like breezes from some pine forest somewhere nowhere near Sydney.
Glad you enjoyed your experience at the Australian Lope. It might have been your last.
I suspect he's taken the piss. To get back to what you were asking before about the process.
Yes.
So once they put all their lists in.
Mm-hmm.
So if they put their top course in, that course gets 100 points.
So nobody can play all 100, I would imagine. So people just list the courses that they visited.
They list as many courses as they've seen over the 2 years.
Is there a minimum that they have to have seen? No?
Usually we don't want anything less than about 30.
Okay. Serious golfers. People are getting out and playing a lot of golf courses for sure.
Exactly. And to be frank, some of the Victorian-based guys, that they have the luxury of having a lot of golf courses within a pretty close proximity. So, and look, I also encourage not just to go and see courses that were in the previous 100, but to go out and have a look at new courses and see what they think. So as those votes come in, I then tally it all up and then the final. So anyone that's read the ranking will see that there's a number next to each course, which is its ranking point. So, for example, I think Royal Melbourne West was at 99.3.
So it's its average ranking place so amongst the panellists.
Exactly. So the number of people who voted for Royal Melbourne West, the total number of points divided by the number of judges that voted for it.
So it sounds like there's absolutely no way for you to manipulate the rankings.
You can't.
It's impossible to manipulate it.
Well, only in as much as selecting the panellists and whatnot, and as long as there's integrity there, which it sounds like there is.
The guys that are the core group are just absolute golf course architecture. I don't want to call them connoisseurs, although they'd like that.
Nerds, I think, is the word.
But I think they're definitely nerds, and there's a few turf nerds in there as well.
Turf nerd is literally in there.
That's it.
And Andrew Anderson.
And then there's guys that just play a lot of golf courses that are in a position in life where they don't have to work all that often and get to play a lot of golf courses. We were the first magazine to have women on our panel.
Mm-hmm.
Off the top of my head, I think we've got about 9.
Okay.
We had a few that in this last period that weren't able to commit for the 2-year period. So that number dropped, but we'll get some more back on board for the next one because they present a different view to what the guys do.
Do you encourage people to ask to be on the panel? Like if people are listening and they'd like to be a part of it, should they get in touch with you?
Or is it like Augusta National, if you ask?
You've ruled yourself out.
I've had people ask, and I always get them to send me through the top 10 courses they've played in the last 12 months. And given that I see pretty much every golf course, at least over a 4-year period, that's on the list, plus probably the next 100 as well, I'll usually have a pretty idea of where they stand in terms of what their observations are and what makes a good golf course. Which is a pretty simple process. And that's getting back to what we were talking about before in terms of working guidelines. I guess the underlying thing is when you combine design, conditioning and the visual appeal of the golf course, it all gets back to, was it fun? And the courses that dominate the top of our list, in fact, scattered right through, they're all fun to play.
It's the myth about Royal Melbourne is that people who've never been there imagine that Royal Melbourne must be incredibly hard because they've heard of it and they played Australia. It's the most fun you can have on a golf course. You can play it with a 7-iron and a putter.
Yeah. Yeah. And
40-degree day with the northerly or something.
Yeah, sure.
You can get
beat. Well, I think Clayton sums it up. It's the easiest golf course in the world to shoot 75 and the hardest golf course in the world to shoot 65.
So. And it's fun for the widest range of golfers. So every woman on our panel had it at number one, all bar, I think, maybe 3 of the rest of our panel had it at number one.
And were they part of the Kingston Heath's a Better Golf Course Club?
No, they were a mix, actually. I think from memory, one had Kate Wickham, one had Barnbougle Dunes, and one had Peninsula Kingswood North.
Nice.
Which,
You could sit and argue the case all day, couldn't you? You're not 100% wrong with any of those.
If one of them had have said Cooper Petey, I would have been concerned.
Be off the panel.
No offense
to Cooper Petey Golf Club, which has got reciprocal rights with St Andrews.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Have they got an underground clubhouse at Cooper Petey?
That's the one. Yeah.
Have they? Because I know most of the residences there are underground because it gets so hot there.
And the motel.
Yeah.
But they
great golf experience, you would think.
Yeah.
Not during the middle of the day, obviously.
It could make the top 25 golf experiences.
Yeah, there you go. Interesting stuff. Do you have to be a good golfer to be on the panel bench?
No. No, by all means not. I'm not.
what's your handicap range? I don't know. Do you even ask people?
Not really.
No. Okay.
I think one of our more astute judges is probably just in the bottom bit of B grade. So... And I'm only saying he's one of our better judges simply because he
pays to be on the panel. No, I'm only kidding. Doesn't matter.
No, that's the other.
That's the other bloke. He's in A grade. Yeah.
No, that's the other magazine. Yeah. He takes the time to actually sit down and make a lot of notes. And so when, and part of our process of of publishing the ranking is that we get our judges to comment. I mean, it's.
I was going to come to this. It's interesting. So you've got to be prepared to put your name on what you say.
That's right.
And understand that there's every chance it'll be in the magazine, which is in print forever.
Yeah. So we don't print every comment that's sent through.
No.
Because obviously there'd be some double ups.
Royal Melbourne would have 50 comments otherwise.
And it'd also be a 1,000-page issue. That's if you put all the comments.
So the best comments are and the most interesting comments, and this particular judge goes to a lot of trouble to time and effort to put a lot of comments together that are insightful.
Is it Logue?
He doesn't do a lot of comments.
Right.
What he does, he's always about quality over quantity.
That is typical Logue, isn't it, eh?
Yeah.
No three-course meal, but each course will be phenomenal.
But you can imagine, though, if you're putting something out that's going to raise debate, you want to back up what you're putting out there.
And be as transparent as you can be, which is important. And be transparent. That's as you're saying.
I mean, I can't imagine, James Halliday Wine Companion or any of the books that are devoted to critiquing food in restaurants, where they wouldn't back up their ranking or listing of a restaurant or brewery or winery without some sort of comment. And I think it's really important. And I think a lot of the actual clubs or courses that make the top 100, they look at those comments and take them on board.
Which is where, as you said earlier, you start to see the improvement idea.
That's it.
A few, I just went through a few this morning to remind myself. People commenting on things like, this would be a couple of places higher with a better tree management program. Those sorts of comments become really important. You hear that from enough people as a club and you start to realize, okay, well, there may be an issue there that we need to.
And it's actually quite, not thrilling, but it's quite exciting to go back to courses, a few years after they've perhaps had, a drop in the ranking and there's been something written about, say, a tree program, and to go back and see that they've actually undertaken some form of tree program and their course is that much better.
Better for it.
Yeah. You feel like, well, if they got that idea from us, great. If they didn't, well, still good because the course is better.
Regardless, it's got to be a part of it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It has to be a part of any push to change a golf course. And in fact, it's probably one of the things we've seen in the last two decades is courses being more aware of and more proactive in improving what they have. We've seen a lot more course restoration right from the top end all the way through. Clubs have realised this is a living, breathing thing. It's ongoing. You don't just plant trees and then forget about it because in 30 years you're going to have a problem. This needs to be an ongoing process. What's it like to be a panelist, Logue? Oh, I'm not on the panel, by the way. I don't play anywhere near enough golf.
That
was a backhanded slap at you. I don't play anywhere near enough golf.
Honestly, fairly invisible because I think there's...
Do you announce yourself? Do you tell people on the panel? Should you? Is that fair?
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. If I've got a game already lined up by some other means, I won't mention it. But if I've got no...
Other reason to get onto
a course, and I'll send a letter, and as BJ pointed out, I'll always explicitly say in the letter,
I need some accommodation. I'm bringing my family.
Not asking for any free of charge thing or anything, but just after a tea time, if I can fit into the comp field or something, like, please don't be.
And what's the
don't inconvenience?
Because the issue with that, of course, is that can trigger then a response of, oh, we better get everything right for the day.
No, honestly, most of the time it's pretty low key because there's a lot of panelists out there. I think from the other magazine, there's maybe a couple of hundred or something.
Yeah, they've got, I think, about 200.
And you kind of get just mixed in with that. And I think they just get a lot of inquiries from panelists from both magazines. So I always sort of point out that Golf Australia is a little bit more of a hand-picked panel, and there's less of us, but we're here to really appreciate the golf. But again, I think a lot of clubs just don't understand that subtlety, and you're just a sort of you're pretty invisible. There's nobody's rolling out the red carpet for me.
I think the feedback that I've got from panelists is that they actually discover more courses covertly. So they might get invited to say they're in the insurance business, but they're on our panel. They get invited to a golf day and they turn up, play the golf day and go, wow, how good is this golf course?
Yeah.
Right.
It's not even one that they would have considered playing had they not been invited to go and play there. So courses then find their way onto, like, we've got a WhatsApp group and we all talk to each other and we pass on tips. You should go and play here. It's really good, blah, blah, blah. So it puts the word out. And then all of a sudden, you know, old mate golf club that was previously 140 has got a bit of a following and it cracks its way into the top 100 simply because a guy's turned up. He hasn't announced himself as part of the panel, but has turned up and found a golf course and passed on that tip. I mean, that's how Port Fairy started.
Yeah, the hidden gem idea.
The hidden gem. So Port Fairy, it wasn't even ranked in the top 100 15 years ago. Took one or two guys on various ranking panels to go out and have a look. Now it's in the top 40 in the country.
Old Mate Golf Club's a fantastic experience, by the way, for anybody who hasn't been there. So there's a reason it's 140 with a bullet heading towards the top. It raises obviously the very interesting issue and the unavoidable one, BJ. You can't see every golf course in the country. Nobody can. There's an awful lot of golf courses that are left out.
Well, that's right. I think, there's 1,500 and something. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, we've got enough judges spread throughout the country. We've even got one who's based in Darwin.
Wow.
Who gets out and travels a bit and plays some golf courses. So we've got enough judges spread throughout so that, I mean, long before the internet, there was the Golfer's Grapevine. And the Golfer's Grapevine is still there, but it's now enhanced by
WhatsApp
and forums and things like that. So you kind of get these little tips along the way about, you know, how good a place was. I got one the other day saying that Moree Golf Club was worth going to have a look at. Now, we'll go and have a look at it. It may not make the 100, but at least it's then on the radar.
Somebody said it for a reason.
They said it for a reason. They found something fun and enjoyable about that golf course. So if it's fun and enjoyable, well, we'll have a look.
You've got to love the idea of the hidden gem, don't you, Logue?
Controversies, BJ. Boogle Run has been allowed into the top 100, so we're allowing in less than 18 holes.
Yeah.
Unconventional courses.
Mm-hmm.
What next, foot golf? Sorry. Sorry.
Do you want to talk to Boogle Run? Where did it come in? It was reasonably good ranking.
Boogle Run came in at number 38.
38, 14-hole course, mostly short courses, only two.
Two behind the Australian, is that what you're telling me?
Yep.
Correct. One behind Portsea and just in front of the Grange West course and two in front of Bonville.
That is going to be controversial. Do you want to explain yourself? Yeah, explain the system.
Well, it's a golf course.
It's just where it came in.
And it's just
we've explained the system.
For those not familiar, it's 14 holes, I think.
14 holes.
14 holes, two par fours.
Short course at the Barmboogle Dunes complex on the Lost Farm side?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just on the edge of the Lost Farm course. Look, it's a golf course. I put it out.
It must have been some conjecture about that within the office about whether or not to put it in. There's others that fall into that, like Elliston, Capital. There's some you don't rank.
Nine hole courses not to as be. Well, but Frankston.
Frankston has received votes in the past, but it's never had enough votes to make that.
It'd be a traffic issue rather than an issue with the course, perhaps?
I think there's been quite a few of our judges play there.
Yeah.
But if it comes in at their, you know, 30th golf course on their list of courses they put in and it doesn't quite get the number.
When it's all tallied up, that doesn't quite.
It doesn't quite crack it to the
100. And let's be honest, they're all trying to keep it to themselves. They don't want other people finding out about it.
Yeah.
Well, it's not overrun.
I mean, it's in the top two or three nine-hole courses in the country.
Back to Boogle Run. So was there much conjecture about it in the office? Do you have discussions about that? And what are the nature of those discussions?
Well, like the discussions we've had in the past about Elliston, and access. Capital have always requested that we don't rank them. Cathedral Lodge has an agreement with another publication, or and we weren't sort of allowed previously to go and have a look there. So we've left that up to our judges. If they go and play there, they can rank it. And so there were conversations about that. And then when it came to Boogle Run, it did present a conundrum. Do we include it? And my thinking was, well, look, it's a golf course. It's in the ground. People can go and play it. If our judges think that it's great, then why not?
If you're just judging it on the architecture, there's some excellent architecture there.
It's great architecture. And look, it's a lot of fun to play. I could actually see myself spending a whole day just going round and round that loop of 14 holes.
Between the 5th and the 8th of March is a great opportunity to be.
I hope you're not going the 5th of March. You better pack your bags. And, you know, perhaps each time pulling a different club out of the bag and going, well, I'm going to play this 14 with the 7-iron and that's the type of golf course.
Take Sandy Jamison's one club down there. There you go.
There you go.
On the thing about golf podcast right now as we speak.
Do 14 holes with hickories.
Another controversy, perhaps Concord, really newly renovated, ranked 30, I think, in this list, which puts it ahead of some notable ones. Let's see. It's ahead of Commonwealth, for example, which people consider that's a little bit controversial perhaps. But, in fact, it's only gone up two places from its previous spot, 32. Sure. It's gone from 32 to 30.
Yeah.
What's the controversy with that?
There is none.
That's a short segment.
It's where the numbers fell, and that's where it came in.
It's had a redesign.
There's controversy
between
only
those two rankings, though, right?
Sorry,
it's had a redesign between those two rankings, or was
Concord wasn't ranked for our 2018 because it was undergoing the renovation. Process. So when it came out of that renovation, the first ranking available was 2020, and it came in at number 32.
Right.
And since then, it's gone up two spots to number 30.
To number 30. Okay. So, which pre-renovation, it was 49 round, just on the edge of the top.
And
50.
Which bucks the trend for new courses, which you would call Concord a new course. It's essentially, it's not, apart from the majority of the routing, it's
Not much hasn't been touched there. Is there?
That's right.
A lot of untouched stuff.
And interesting, it got a bit of exposure being a tournament venue again.
Concord, New South Wales Open.
It's probably not insignificant. Not necessarily a factor in the judging, but it certainly raises awareness of the golf course.
I think what it does highlight is the fact that, one, it's on a pretty good piece of land, and two, how the previous incarnation could have been better.
Yeah.
And this is better.
And it also shows how it plays for extremely highly skilled golfers as well. That was my takeaway from going to the New South Wales Open there last year and seeing those green surrounds and the challenge that presents for a player of our standard, and then seeing how the pros handle that as well, I thought was quite interesting. And in the fact that it holds up to both
course that can straddle that. Mm. I mean, you got to remember that any golf course that hosts an event, it's for 1 week. So, for the other 51 weeks of the year, the course has got to be playable for the membership. If it can do both, great. Royal Melbourne's already proven that a number of times. And nearly, apart from the Bamboo courses and the King Island courses, they've not hosted events. All of those top courses are able to do that.
Most pros, interestingly, have been to Barmboogle, or most of our top pros have been to Barmboogle and or Cane Wickham. They've got that sort of appeal, aren't they? It's interesting to see that that's kind of dope, especially that you were talking about the pros handling Concord. You go and watch pros play at a course you've played yourself, and you realise the staggering skill level of the players you've never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
you can't imagine how good they are. You know, you can see a player who's got exactly the same shot you faced and made a complete mess of, thinking you'd played it well, and you watch the result. And you're like, I've never heard of this bloke. How is he not the best player in the world?
Yeah, that's right.
So
get back to what you were saying about Concord. It's not everyone's cup of tea. I've spoken to people at other golf courses since this ranking came out, and they say, "Oh, how does Concord get there?" You know, I don't get it. But you chat to others,
it's
go,
the one I'm asked about all the time. So
yeah, but I'm always asked about the Lakes.
Where's the Lakes ranked?
14 or something.
So the Lakes come in at 14. It's been ranked between 13 and 16 every year for the last decade.
What do you get asked? Should it be higher or lower?
They don't understand it's that high.
Ah, okay.
How can the Lakes be that high?
Surely, I'm not a fan of the place.
Surely, exactly.
I'm not a fan.
He's not a fan. And
why is that?
I find the clue's in the title, isn't it? The Lakes. There's just too much water and too much silly water for my life in terms of a golf course.
Well, there's no.
And I just don't like it.
For mine, it's a very exciting sequence of shots with the water. Like, as soon as the water starts to come into play, I think you've just got this sequence of shots.
You do. So the 16th is the prime example. I find the 16th hole. I said this to Clayton. I said, the 16th hole is just so too hard. He just looked me straight in the eye and said, for bad golfers, I'm right here, Clayton. Yeah, it's just too hard. I don't know how you play that hole.
You can edge your way around the left there.
Well, you could putt it around the left, but that'd be about your only hope. So I just find that. To me, there's some stuff there.
Therein lies the beauty of a ranking.
Which I don't think it's
three of us sitting here. Three of us sitting here. We've all probably got a different opinion about every golf course, apart from maybe one or two. And when you bring all of that together and you times that by 10, in terms of the number of judges, then you've got some differing views, and that's scattered through top 100.
So Concord was redone by Renaissance Design.
Yep.
Gunner Matter. Redone by Renaissance Design, maybe another controversial one, breaking into the top 10. The Ocean, formerly known as the Ocean Course at the National, where was it ranked then? It's fair to say it's a completely new golf course.
It's a completely different golf course. So under advisement from the National, who consider it to be a new golf course, that's what we've looked at it as a new golf
course. That is a fair assessment too, isn't it? They've changed the direction of holes, tees have switched with greens. There's nothing that resembles what was there.
The only thing that resembles anything of the Ocean Course is when you stand out the front of the clubhouse, there's a golf course between you and the ocean.
Nicely put.
Yarra, I'm trying to uncover some controversy here. So Yarra Yarra up to 17 from 32, so almost halved its ranking, so getting quite high up there.
That was Stokes.
Another Renaissance.
That was because
are you getting paid by Tom Doak? That's what I want to know.
Is Tom Doak the rank?
Well, okay, 32. When it was ranked at 32, that might have been one of the courses you didn't get to see. But it was a hodgepodge.
No, I'd been there when it was ranked there.
Yeah. It was a hodgepodge.
Yeah. It was overgrown.
And to be frank,
it was very parkland, actually, which wasn't true.
Stevie Wonder could have gone in there with a bunch of bulldozers and made some improvements to that place.
Had great greens.
Condition-wise,
that's a course that used to deliver and always has delivered something that their members, consistent sand in the bunkers, great greens, beautiful conditions, nice clubhouse. The members probably thought, there's no problem. What's
top
the problem?
10 golf experience.
Yep.
Agree. But anyway, you could have gone in there and made a lot of improvements without really knowing too much. And then a lot of it was around returning it to what it was like when Alex Russell designed it. And that's pretty much what they did.
One of the most simple renovations, really, wasn't it? Get rid of a bunch of trees, change the mowing lines, restore what the bunkers used to be.
They could have gone in there with shovels rather than bulldozers. Yeah. They didn't have to do much. One of the most controversial things in terms of the feedback we've got was how high we ranked Lonsdale Links first time up.
I just want to return to my comment for Yarra Yarra.
Yes.
After its Tom Doak and Brian Slawnick restoration, Yarra Yarra might now be the best course in the world with a repeating name.
Wagga Wagga. Woi Woi doesn't have a golf course. Where else have we got?
Is there a better course in the world that has a repeating name?
Is there any other place in the world that has repeating names for towns and things? Or is it a uniquely Australian thing?
I think it might be.
And there's not even many of those. Wagga Wagga, Woi Woi, where else have you got?
I don't know. We've concluded it's the best course in the world with a double name.
Did you put that in the magazine, that comment of his?
It's in the magazine. I just read it.
I put it in there to just let the readership know.
I'll, Hold it up to the light. Let the people make their own judgment, that's as right. they do with the golf courses.
As you need to do sometimes.
Sorry, I interrupted you. You were talking about Lonsdale.
Yeah, I mean, some of the feedback was, you know, that Lonsdale was too high, but I...
Wait, 20, I think, is it?
That number 20, yeah.
Is there recency bias sometimes? You've been doing these for a long time. Yeah, do you see recency bias sometimes? I mean, there's a lot of excitement about Cape Wickham. There was a lot of excitement about Barnwell Dunes when it opened. It has to be
sometimes, doesn't it? The first time a course appears in the ranking, like a new course or one that's been extensively renovated, I can guarantee you will always, 9 times out of 10, the second time it appears, it'll be at a lower rank. If it maintains its position or goes higher, then it's a quality. So we've seen that with Concord. We've seen that with, let me look at one here. I'm just trying to think. I'll give you an example. There was a Sydney course that appeared in our top 100 ranking maybe 6 years ago that was in the top 40 first up. It's now in the 80s. So it's one of those that have...
Lots of excitement.
Lots of excitement early. It's the first course that's open in a while in a particular area. It excites people. But over the period of time after it settles in and they start cutting the rough in a different way, or it's not quite, the further it moves away from what the designer signs off on, usually.
Which is why the renovation business exists, doesn't it? Like, because over the decades, bunkers slowly become little round discs and greens shrink. And
of course, with new courses, like particularly in Sydney, there's got to be a housing development to have paid for it. So it's putting its best foot forward for the first year or two.
Yeah.
Till the real estate is all sold, and we know the story all too often, the golf course then becomes somewhat secondary. Then eventually the wheel goes full circle and somebody comes in and makes it, turns it back into what it could always have been. So that tends to be the history.
I want to get back briefly to Lonsdale Links. One question I do get asked as a panelist is, what do we have to do to get in the top 100? And most clubs ask it when they're on a trajectory to like engage an architect in a new master plan or something like that. Like, oh, what sort of guidelines should we be giving our architect here for the master plan to try and get us in the top 100? And, you know, most courses it's pretty easy to sort of say, well, look, you should look at your grassing lines and the trees and...
Trees and mowing lines, there's 80% of it. Yeah.
But then to really break in there, like Lonsdale, I think, is a great example because it's on debut, it's 20, and it was a golf course for a long, long time. But it was nowhere, and it was a completely different golf experience, very average golf experience before, like overrun with salt bush.
And it didn't even make our top 100 public access.
Yeah, right. And now it's gone. It's played that game as good as it could possibly be played, just about, like going from absolutely nowhere to number 20 without massive change in their footprint of their land either. Like, it's still short. They did acquire some land, but they sold some land. So, and it's a shortish course. It still feels like a pretty big property when you're there. But a lot of that's because of the vegetation management, the clearing out of all of the scrub and everything they did. But they also took, so OCM designed it. And it's clear from the architecture there that there was a lot of risks being taken with what they did. And that has paid off for them. What is it with clubs that want to get into the top 100, but they're unwilling to take the risks that are involved in getting all the way into the top 50? And so they find themselves just taking these baby steps and just getting into the top 100 and then slipping out again a few years later.
Far too many courses that aren't in the top 100 equate being in the top 100 with being difficult. So... And you would have had these conversations with Clates over the years, I would imagine, that, okay, how do we make our golf course better? We got to make it harder.
The original Golf Digest Top 100 list was the most difficult courses in America or something like that. But I think Clates knows the exact.
Magazines love a list. It's true. Yeah. Lists are great. People love lists.
So that is a misconception.
Is it still the case, Beach? Is it still as widely held? I feel like we've been on a 15-year.
No. Look, I get to go and see a lot of golf courses and chat to different people connected with different clubs, whether they be GMs or committee members. And there's still this underlying belief that if their course was more challenging, then it would be a top 100 golf.
More challenging and better groomed. And what they should be looking at is just
part
fun,
of that. Part fun, of right? Yeah, exactly. But part of that being more challenging is having greens that run at 11.
Yes. Yeah, and consistent sand in the bunkers, even though that's not more challenging.
Sand in the bunkers.
Where have you read consistent sand in the last couple of weeks? That's about the fourth time you've said it. It's clearly top of mind for you. Yes.
I read it in a member survey. I guarantee every single member survey in the whole of Australia would come out exactly the same, that we want fast greens and consistent sand in the bunkers.
Where do these ideas come from?
The first thing is, well, they look at the PGA Tour. You know, you've got committee members who sit in front of the TV and watch PGA Tour every week, and there are guys gouging out clubs and gouging out shots from 2-inch rough. And then all of a sudden the super gets a directive from a committee member or a captain or someone who's paying his bills. We need to make the course harder. We need to. It's not just restricted to the club championships and the monthly medal. All of a sudden it becomes par for the course.
Or something like you can't fill in this bunker or you can't get rid of that tree because it makes it too easy.
Too easy.
Too easy is the most overused two words.
There's some easy holes at Lonsdale. But then the thing that suggests to me, like if you're a club committee member listening to this and you're thinking about changes for your course, think about something like this. At Lonsdale, on the 18th tee, there is no formal teeing ground. It's just sort of, and it's on a slope.
That's bold. That is so bold. that could backfire. That's a risk. You're right.
Yeah. It's on a slope and there's no formal teeing ground. There's just a couple of pegs stuck in what looks like a fairway, like going up a hill. And it's fantastic. You arrive there and you think to yourself, how cool is this?
Or
and
conversely, a lot of people
and it works for the shot that you're hitting as well, hitting up a hill, like being able to tee it up and being
hitting
slightly uphill.
You know that's not
universal. No, I know that's not universal.
Lots of people are saying, what sort of a goat track is this? Hasn't even got a proper tee.
The committee that decided to allow that is the sort of committee that will. That's the sort of decision.
Outside the 100 to number 20.
But did they even allow it? No, they just gave their architects free rein to be imaginative and create something really interesting.
I agree.
And
that's bold, but risky too, isn't it?
That's the sort of bold thing I'm talking about.
Look, it is risky.
Get you into the top 50.
That sloping tee thing, to get to your point there, I had a interesting conversation with Ted Sterling, who, for those that don't know, was part of the design team at Bonneville and has advised a lot of courses over the years about course design. And he actually revealed to me that it's not common practice, but it is practice, the art of making a tee slope up. By maybe 2 or 3 degrees, so that particularly on a hole that goes uphill to a crest of a hill, to help or encourage, you know, the high handicap golfer to get the ball in the air.
First at Port Marnock, for the opposite reason, it's much more than 2 or 3 degrees, but it's an uphill tee.
Yeah. Beautiful drop, that one. Beautiful name drop.
But into a wind, it's a nightmare. Like it's having to hit from that uphill tee into a wind. It's an absolute nightmare.
But look, sorry.
I wanted to go back quickly to this notion of people wanting – first things first, if your goal is to get into the top 100 as a golf course, you're probably pursuing the wrong things. That's not the good starting point. Make the course the best it can and it'll fall where it might if that's in the top 100. So be
it's all about the criteria, I think, that you set yourself, though.
Makes sense on 100 calls. What I was going to say was it does point to the importance of this as an educational thing, does it not? I feel like for the past 15 or 20 years, particularly with the growth of the internet, where all the golf architecture nerds have found each other, we all used to be isolated all over the place, everyone's found each other on the web, there has been a shift. A lot more people understand and think about the role of architecture and design in making golf courses fun and interesting to play, as opposed to just hard. Now, I don't think we're all the way there, but do you sense that shift? Is Lonsdale an example of that shift?
Absolutely sense that shift. And it actually, if you look at our top 100, the depth of quality in the top 100 now, and it gets back to what I was saying before, is far deeper than it was 20 years ago.
Not to take credit for it, but what role do you think the top 100 rankings play in that sort of thing? Because the types of courses that end up in there are the guiding light for the courses that Logue talked about that want to be in there, are they not? So if we see courses like Bumboogle, Cape Wickham, Lonsdale, they've got the advantage, many those that particularly have great sites and whatnot, but that more, less tree line, narrow fairways, deep rough, deep bunkers, more open, slopey greens, fun ground game golf must have an impact, must it not?
Oh, absolutely. I think the rankings play its part. And I think what you were saying too, with more information being out there, of what is more widely considered the better way to go with a golf course to make it more interesting to play, more importantly, to be more environmentally sustainable, and to also keep your costs down. So, you know, watering, I mean, there are some cases where, you know, a course, say, for example, in Sydney, will use a lot more water, obviously, in hot weather to keep bent grass greens from dying off and things like that. That can't be avoided. But over just watering for the sake of watering, that's one thing that's looked at. So, you know, if we can go to a grass type that doesn't suck as much water, if we can remove trees that suck the water out of the ground and affect the turf quality, we'll get rid of those, if they're obviously not native.
Doesn't belong there, yep.
So all of that kind of work is being done everywhere. And ultimately, you know, the removal of, you know, a lot of pine trees on a golf course that really they were planted there because someone on the committee liked pine trees. Well, get rid of them and it actually. Yeah,
yeah. What are you talking about?
Stop it.
You know, made me lose some train of thought there, Adrian. Sorry, mate.
I've got another question for you, Beach. How much of your time is legitimately taken up with this? This feels to me like the most important thing in some ways that the magazine does on a 2 year, but this one and then the public access top 100 that you do the years, every 2 years for the top 100, every other year is the top 100 public access. This to me is one of the most important contributions magazines make. It's got, you know, there are its issues and its faults. We've discussed all of those, but it's important stuff. How much of your time does this take on a rolling 2 year basis?
Look, it takes up a lot of time, but less time now than it did when I first started doing it over 20 years ago. So I needed to educate myself on course architecture and what's good and what's bad and identifying, you know, what makes a good golf course, and just seeing a lot of golf courses. Now that I've seen a lot of golf courses, I've probably seen you know, upwards of 800 courses around the country over 25 years.
Multiple times too.
Multiple times.
Whenever the magazine, this is probably not said enough, but whenever the magazine needs some photos, you just go out and take them, right?
Yeah.
And as a consequence, you've seen maybe more courses. I don't know anybody who's seen more, maybe the caravan guy, but who's seen more courses more often around the whole country than you.
Go on. Yeah.
And photograph them and can talk to them as well, like can speak intelligent, like just name a course and you'd be able to say something about it.
And not just the ones you'd expect. Lots of people played the known name courses in each state, lots and lots, but you get to courses that are.
And a lot of people don't know that about each other. He's played more golf or seen more golf courses around Australia than almost any living human being, I would imagine, and photographed them. And to photograph a thing as well, you really see it when you photograph it.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
I don't think you can photograph it without looking at it, can you? You must be looking at it to photograph.
It's like they say, you never really look at a thing until you've actually drawn it or something. But
and actually, it's interesting you say that because you do get a perspective of a golf course when you photograph it. And the last probably 5 years that I've been using more drone photos and doing more drone photos, you get an even different more. It's a different perspective again on top of that. So from what you can see above, and that's why I think too, I mean, that's, you know, there's a lot more course supers now using drones to look at their own golf course. You just see it in a different light.
And by the way, aren't course supers, for mine, probably the biggest change is in the educated course super who's got an interest in architecture and the way the golf course plays compared to 25 years ago is just off the charts.
Yeah.
The number of those guys who are into it.
And a lot of it's good. There's some bad. My pet peeve at the moment is the fairway bunker surrounded by a collar of, I think we call it pubic hair.
Yes.
So whether it's a thick ring of zoysia or
prevents the ball running into the bunker.
Well, not only prevents the ball running into the bunker, the ball sinks down into it, makes it a far more difficult recovery shot. And the only people that you're penalising are high handicap golfers.
And it's a distortion of something that you see executed beautifully in like London Heathland or something where you've got some ground cover like heather or something just decorating the top edge of a bunker, which is a beautiful thing. But a distortion of that is to surround a bunker with a different grass.
Top edge is fine.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't influence where the ball's going.
But it's definitely a trend to grass all around a bunker.
There's a course in Sydney, I won't name it, but there's one particular short par four where there's a centerline bunker, which is totally surrounded by 1 foot wide collar of thick, lush zoysia.
Golfers all over Sydney are now racking their brains to think about which hole on which course
the seventh?
That may be. Don't ruin the
My point being
is that the emails to Rod Morrie.
The only people that are going to get really penalised by that are the short hitting ladies and high handicap.
You can lose a ball in that really thick stuff.
Yeah.
Which is like a foot.
And my argument is, why bother have a bunker there at all?
Yeah.
Just have a mound with rough on it.
Yeah. And that's, I think I, you know, there's.
So if you want to get in the 100, get rid of that.
Get rid of that stuff. You gave, or people ask me, I know, about, you know, what do we need to do? And often it comes down to these grassing decisions. And, of course, like, I think Magenta Shores have gone through and started putting in Santa Ana Cooch all throughout the course, which is a lot better choice of grass for what they were trying to do. And they asked you, right?
Yeah, they got in touch with me after it might have been the 2016 ranking about, you know, what could they do to improve the enjoyment of the golf course. And I said, well, here's the thing. You've got a golf course that is Lynx style, sort of it's a kind of a Lynx hybrid. There's elements of Sandbelt in there and there's elements of Lynx.
It's aesthetically spectacular, Magenta Shore.
It really is.
Absolutely.
Ross Watson's best work.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Agreed.
First and last hour of the day, you want to get out there and have a look and just be amazed.
An 18th hole in the evening or the early morning, stand on the tee there and look at just the shape.
Yeah. Surrounded by houses now.
It is, but leave that aside.
Yeah. So they had all of these, some of Watson's best ever bunkering.
Yep.
Greenside bunkering. And then they had a collar of rough, you know, in between the putting surface and the lip of the bunker, about an inch high. Why would you do that? The only means that any shot that you hit up into that position that could possibly roll into the bunker and actually incorporate the bunker into the design, well, that bunker's really taken out of play because the only way you're going in there is if you fly your shot offline. And then
we're talking about a Lynx course here.
Exactly.
You turn a ground hazard into an aerial hazard. Yeah.
So they actually then, to their credit, went around and looked at where they could eliminate that.
Yep. Now ranked 33.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty fair. It's a good golf course, Magenta Shores. When they first opened,
ranked it 42 in 2014. And through all the improvements that they've made, they've been identified by the judges along the way as being improvements.
Very consistent. They would have maybe slipped out of the top 50 if they had kept going the other way.
Yeah, and look, they'd also be financially probably not going so well too because they were spending a lot of money on water.
Yes, that's another thing. They regrassed the greens, didn't they?
They redid all the fairways with Santa Ana, but they also put in some water storage, so they're in a much better position now. And the course looks it, you know, it's outstanding.
Indeed, I think we'll pull the plug on it there. Outstanding stuff, BJ. I could talk about this stuff for a long time. We'll do the top 100 public access courses when it comes out next year. I imagine you're already got bits and pieces trickling in for that? How do people get part of that?
Well, we have a different – well, we've got a few of the judges do both, but we've got a completely different panel. And so there's a little bit more emphasis on conditioning because you find that, you know, a lot of those public access courses are what you call in, you know, destination areas. People want to know, you know, is this course going to be good enough to go and play on my holiday? And for whatever reason, you know, most punters out there like to know that they're going to play a course that's in good nick.
Good nick. It certainly would, for public access, certainly. One thing I did want to ask you about, for those just outside the 100, there must be a smattering of really interesting courses that end up between sort of 100 and 110. What do you do with
that? That list is published as well, right?
We also publish
up to 130,
list.
I think.
Yeah. So I think from off the top of my head, we had 170-odd courses actually received a vote in this last ranking.
About 10%, a bit over 10% of what exists in the country, which is not too bad with a country this size.
Yeah. And when we do that point breakdown that I was telling you about before, so I reckon from probably 85 through to 100, there's probably maybe 10 points separates those bottom 15, and then there's probably only about 7 or 8 points that separate 100 from 120.
It's the more like C grade, it's the most competitive end of it, isn't it?
It's the bigger pool. And there's some great courses in
Western Australian.
Yeah, Royal Fremantle.
Cottesloe.
Dismissed out, Cottesloe.
You won't have a bad time at any of those golf courses, will you?
They have to ask themselves, though, are they better than Pacific Dunes, which came in at 100? Which is a course that, you know, launched with a lot of fanfare and obviously an architect design, as well as not an old course that's just been managed by committees over many years. So,
yeah,
it's hard to beat that, honestly. That's a course that's been designed and recently.
Well, it spent a lot of time in the sort of low 70s, yep. So 71, 72.
So now just holding on to the top 100. So is your course better
in that period of time, so say since 2016, the number of courses that have been renovated or have reopened due to an extensive renovation or new courses that have come in, you know, it's now finds itself in a position where it's just on the edge of the 100 after being at 83 2 years ago. Yeah.
Extremely penal course.
I mean, there's a lot of courses, there's a lot of movement between say 90 and 100 every 2 years. So there's, if a course moves from the 80s to the 90s, unless they do something, you can guarantee that there's something just outside the 100 that is doing something to get into the 100.
So people going, they're not doing anything wrong necessarily. People are doing things right to go past them.
Great point.
That's it.
They're not going backwards. They're just standing still and everyone else is gone.
And that's the thing. Standing still is going backwards.
Going backwards, yeah. I think it's safe to say what we can safely say, Beege, and it's a very good testament to the quality of golf in Australia, that if the 100th best course in Australia is Pacific Dunes, we're doing all right, aren't we?
We're doing great.
Yeah. That's fantastic stuff. Been great to have you along today, mate. Must get you into the studio more often. You're just across the road.
Mm.
Don't be a stranger.
It's a misery getting across that road, though.
But it's a misery getting across. Yeah. As Lowe say, it's like...
You've got to wait at the lights.
People don't understand. You've got to wait. The lights aren't timed right. Even the footpaths really aren't even...
The coffee when you get here is a hate crime.
There's some construction going on now. You have to walk a little plank to get across into the doorway here. It's an indignity.
It's a living hell, yeah. It is.
We could be broadcasting from Kiev Podcast Studios and it would be no good at all.
Indeed.
I better get on to grab the domain name for that, just in case. Good to have you along today, mate. Let's get you in more often during the year.
Thanks
we always say it, and we don't do it, so we're going to do it this year. Lowe, good to have you in too, mate. Always enjoyable.
Thanks, Rod.
Thanks for your contribution to the top 100. How many quotes did you get on the courses? How many?
I don't know.
You haven't counted them. You know exactly how many.
About a dozen. I don't know.
About a dozen.
BJ very generously, I think, prints all of the ones that I submit. So,
not all of them.
Okay. Most of the ones I submit.
Don't start printing what's in my WhatsApp.
Did I print the one about
I'm not in the WhatsApp group. I'm going to have to ask about that.
Mate, you got the invite. You just never took it up.
It's Good Good, episode 103 in the books. Episode 104 coming out next week. We'll see you then here on the Good Good Golf Podcast.